Am I on? Okay, thanks. We are in part D of Matthew chapter 26. I'm not in a hurry. There are so many good things. We've got actually a couple of more weeks to spend in this chapter. I handed this handout to you because we're going to look at it. We mentioned it briefly last week. I figured it was worth mentioning 2 weeks in a row, especially since we had about 30 people gone last week. Happy anniversary, you guys. 20 years. I think that deserves. So they were one of the people that were gone. So I passed this along to you not because somebody's been tattling on you or, you know, I think you're especially big losers or anything. I heard this a number of years ago at a pastor's conference that I was at, and I looked at and I wept through the whole study because I realized it was my life. And it kind of shocked me that the sequence of steps towards Peter's downfall are laid out so clearly in sequence. And yet I had never seen it, and because I had never been forewarned, I was not forearmed. And I have made bad mistakes in my life that I would give anything if I could change. I cannot. That's what the blood of Jesus has done. He has cleansed me. But you can't change things in the past. So I pass this on to you because it's tremendously helpful. It is in the very text that we're studying today. So I have the precedent to do that. I didn't just pick this out of the blue. This is where we are landing. We stopped last week, I believe, at verse 47. If you weren't here, please pick up the CD. You know they're free. And catch up to speed. Mostly we just looked at Jesus' prediction of all of the disciples, he said in verse 31, he said, you're all going to fall away tonight. You're all going to be stumbled and abandon me. And I don't know what kind of church you were raised in, but before I came to Calvary Chapel, there was so much pressure on me that I thought, you know, I was basically, my salvation was in my hands. That is not true. My salvation is in God's hands. He's done all the hard part. He's got a better grip than I do. And it was worth looking at to see how Jesus deals with people's failures. First of all, he's not shocked when we fail. He's not surprised at all. That's not to say he's not hurt. He is hurt, but not for the same reason that we're hurt when people fail us. But he has a plan, and sometimes the plan for certain of us is that we need to fail. We would absolutely be no good. We certainly couldn't give mercy. You can't really truly give mercy to people unless you know that you've received mercy. What happens if people around you fail? You just lecture them, or you shun them, or you're critical of them. And we looked for a while in Luke chapter 22 where Jesus... it's Luke's the only one that covers it. All four Gospels cover Jesus' prediction of Peter's denial, but Luke's the only one that tells us that in that conversation when Peter swore twice, yeah, you can't count on all these other people, but I am ready to die for you. I would rather give up my life than ever disown you. And he meant that just like we do, with all of his heart. But the problem is Peter was a lot weaker than he thought he was. And he needed to find that out. And in Luke 22, Jesus, after he told Peter he was going to fail, please note that when he says, Satan wants to sift all of you guys like wheat. We don't know what that looks like in our culture unless you live in a third world country, but you take the cut wheat and you beat it with a flail, and then you throw it up in the air and you let the wind blow the chaff away, and the grains fall to the ground. Usually have to do that a few times till all the chaff is gone. And Jesus said, you know, that's what Satan wants to do to all you guys that have committed yourselves to following me, to see who's left. But Jesus looked at Peter, the one who was certain he was the strongest, and he said, Peter, you're the one I'm praying for. What was he praying for Peter? He wasn't praying that Peter wouldn't fail. Peter needed to fail. He already told him he would. He was praying that after Peter failed, that his faith wouldn't fail. Would I pray in Peter, he's saying, that you'll go right on trusting in me, because you're going to need to believe in the Jesus that forgave the adulterous woman and the Jesus that forgave the woman in the drunken town in the despised country. You're going to need to believe that that Jesus is your Jesus. So I'm praying that after you fail, your faith won't fail. And after you have been restored, he says, strengthen your brothers. We talked about that to quite great length last week. We won't. I'm just bringing you up to speed. This week we won't talk about it. But it sets us up for the next sequence in the story. And we're creeping our way through it. We'll probably only get about as far as verse 56. So just about 9 or 10 verses today. But I am going to read the entire portion all the way through to the end. So hang in with me, because I don't want us to lose the context of all of this. If you were to, the way it's laid out, you have to have all four Gospels to really get all of the good details. So this is going to be kind of a Baptist Bible study today, where we're going to jump around a little bit. We'll be jumping around to Mark 14 and Luke 22 and John 18. You don't have to stick your finger in there now. I would rather you didn't go there and look at it and than to miss what it is that I'm saying. But the details are important, and the unfolding of the sequence is important. If we could watch this on TV, it would have to be a split-screen TV, because some of the events at the end of chapter 26 take place at the same time. When Peter is failing, Jesus is on trial, and Peter's not there. So we're going to be jumping around, so please hang on to the context of it. I am going to read, as I said, all the way through, and then I want to read through this outline just for those that we're going to try to get it online if we can, because we have lots of people that listen online, and I'd like to have it, but I'm going to read it for those that don't have it in front of their eyeballs. But beginning at verse 47, last thing we saw Jesus do was take the three problem children, Peter, James, and John, with him when he said, I feel like I'm dying. But they were worn out from all the events of the day, and when he needed them to be there praying with him, they were sleeping. The first time he came back to see if they were praying with him, he found them sleeping, and he said, Peter. He didn't address the others. But he addressed Peter and he said, Peter, don't you remember? I told you were in trouble, buddy. You need to be praying. This is not the time to sleep. Then he went away and he prayed to his father that prayer of surrender. Father, not my will, but your will be done. Daddy, what you will, not what I will. And he prayed that three times. And when he came back in verse 45, they were still sleeping, and he said, you know what, it's going down. Verse 46, rise, let us go, here comes my betrayer. So we're going to jump into verse 47. While he was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, arrived. With him was a large crowd. The word would be better translated mob. There were 600 of them, one of the Gospels tells us. Don't you think that's just a tad overkill to arrest one carpenter? A large crowd, 600 people, armed with swords and clubs, sent from the chief priests and the elders of the people, the religious leaders of Israel. I'm going to tell you the details. This is the second time they sent a mob to arrest Jesus. The first time, the guys all came back and they just didn't have the heart to arrest him. So maybe that's why they sent 600 people this time. They thought, well, you know, if a bunch of guys weenie out, well, at least we'll still have some clubs and swords and we'll get it done. 48. And now the betrayer had arranged a signal with them. The one I kiss is the man. Arrest him. Going at once to Jesus, Judas said, "Greetings, Rabbi," and he kissed him. And Jesus replied, and this is a private conversation. These two, the thing that Judas says, the thing that Jesus says, you know, nobody can really hear what they're saying. And Jesus replied, "Friend," or "my friend, do what you came for." And I wanted you to, this is a good time to turn over to John 18, because I want to read verses 4 through 9, because John's the only one that mentions this, and I think it's important to our story. Verse 4, John 18. Jesus, knowing all that was going to happen to him, went out and asked them, "Who is it that you want?" So here's Judas, comes up, kisses him. Jesus said, "My friend, I'm not against you." This is the second time he's called him friend in the last few hours, by the way. So Jesus, knowing what's going to happen, walks up to the crowd and says, who do you want? I believe this is crowd control to prevent panic. And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth, I am." My NIV says, "I am he." It says it three times in the next few verses, but the word "he," it doesn't appear in the Greek text. So he said, "I am." Jesus said, "I am." And Judas, the traitor, was standing there with them when Jesus said, "I am." When Jesus said, "I am," they drew back and fell to the ground. It's very strong in Greek. It says they lurched backward and they all fell down. I think I saw that on a Three Stooges movie once, except there was fewer guys, where like dominoes falling down. But 600 people with malicious intent. That would have been something to see. And again he asked them, "Who is it you want?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth. I told you that I am," Jesus answered. "If you are looking for me, then let these men go." How many times have you heard that in a movie? Or Indiana Jones, you know, and the Nazis have got him cornered. And he says, "Okay, it's me that you want. Let all these other people go." What is that? It's protection. It's also giving the disciples a chance to leave. And we'll talk about that this morning. Because Jesus Christ uses no coercion to get people to follow him. You are free to leave at any time, despite what church people say. He doesn't want you to. But he wants you with him because you want to be, not because you're forced to be. So this is protection, verse 8, and he's also giving the disciples an opportunity to leave. Verse 9, this happened so that the words he'd spoken would be fulfilled when he said, "I've not lost one of those that you gave me." Mark tells us that at this point he's seized and arrested. When the guy stepped forward to arrest him, verse 10, Simon Peter, who had a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant, cutting off his right ear. Let's flip back over to Matthew. I should have done that after verse 9. I know some of you are not used to flipping around like this. That's okay. We'll get through this. So Peter, Matthew doesn't tell us it's Peter. He just says one of the disciples. John tells us it's Peter. John and Peter had this thing that whenever Peter did something dumb. John's the gospel that says it was Peter, which I find kind of interesting, sort of sibling, the whole tattling thing. So verse 51 now in Matthew. With that, one of Jesus' companions, Peter, reached for his sword, drew it out, and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear. Luke tells us it was his right ear. John tells us it was his right ear. I'll tell you why I think that's important. Flip over to Luke 22, because Luke mentions something here that none of the other guys do. Luke was a doctor, so you can see why this would stood out in the story to him. In Luke 22, verse 51. Luke makes it really clear. He uses a medical term when he says the ear was cut completely off, amputated. Verse 51. No more of this, Jesus answered, and he touched the man's ear, and he healed him. I don't know why that's so tender to me. Back to Matthew. That was the last miracle that Jesus performed, by the way, destroying the evidence of Peter's impulsiveness and sin. John Corson says that's still the miracle Jesus most often does, is healing people who've been wounded by our foolish flailing. Put your sword back in its place, verse 52, Jesus said to Peter, for all those who draw the sword will die by the sword. That, by the way, is not a rebuke. That's protection. Do you think I cannot call on my Father and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? That, by the way, is 80,000 angels. You read the Old Testament and you find out that it took one angel to wipe out an entire army. Tens of thousands of people. One angel. What in the world could 80,000 do? So he says, you know, your protection is unnecessary, flesh boy. I've got 80,000, a squad, tactical squad of angelic swordsmen, and they would have got the whole head, not just the ear. And then John adds in John 18, Jesus says, shall I not drink the cup that my Father has given me? Verse 54 is a kind of a parenthetical phrase after Jesus said, don't you think I could have called rescuers? But how then would the scriptures be fulfilled that say it must happen in this way? In other words, I'm not trying to stop this, Peter. And if I was, I wouldn't ask you. At that time, Jesus said to the crowd, I think this is crowd control again, by the way. He said to the crowd, am I leading a rebellion that you have come out with swords and clubs to capture me? Every day I sat in the temple courts teaching and you didn't come arrest me. But all of this has taken place that the writing of the prophets may be fulfilled. And then, sad words, and then all of the disciples deserted him and ran away. I drew a line in my Bible back up to verse 35, where it says, all of the disciples said the same thing as Peter, we'll never abandon you. I find it comforting that Jesus knows my weaknesses better than I do. That's why it's really important to pay attention to his warnings. I'll tell you what the events are that happen next. I'm not going to read, like I said I would, all the way through. It'll just take too much time. But we'll look at it in detail next week. The results of the arrest, there are two trials. John mentions one that none of the other gospels do. It's not a legal trial. It's not even an official trial. But it has to do with the fact that there were two high priests. there was a high priest named Annas who was the high priest by right of succession. But he refused to cooperate with the Romans, and Israel was occupied by the Roman army. And so the Romans appointed their own high priest, a man named Caiaphas. So the religious leaders of Israel at this point in our story grab Jesus, carry him off to the home of Annas, who was the only high priest that they officially they recognized. And Annas pronounced that he thought that Jesus deserved to be put to death because he claimed to be the Son of God. And we'll look at this in detail next week. I think it's an important distinction because there are people today who say, I hear them all the time, who say that Jesus never actually claimed to be the Son of God. That was an invention of his disciples. It's a very popular belief. But the problem is those people haven't read the scripture that say that because that was why they wanted to put him to death. So we'll look at that next week, and then they dragged him off to Caiaphas for the appearance of legality. They still couldn't put him to death. He had to be brought to trial and proven guilty of sedition so the Romans would kill him because they did not allow the Jewish people to have the right of execution. They gave him a lot of freedom in their courts, but they wouldn't let him do that, and they wanted to kill him. And so then Jesus is taken before Roman authorities, and we'll look at that next week. Now I'm going to read to you the five steps to Peter's downfall that I gave you on your handout. I think we'll be able to scan this outline maybe and upload it to the website. I wrote the verses down for each step. Like I said, this is laid out in sequence. I have to admit to you, even after all these years, when I read this, I wince because it's like my own story of my worst failures. It could have all been prevented. Peter's downfall could have been prevented at any point. It's best prevented the earlier in the sequence, the better. But here is the step one. Peter didn't believe that he was weak. He was absolutely convinced everyone else was weak, but not him. And we find that in verse 33 and verse 35, which we looked at last week. Step two in Peter's downfall was he didn't follow Jesus' advice to stay alert and prayerful. And we find that in verses 40 through 45, which we also looked at last week. There in the garden, where Jesus singled Peter out and he said, Peter, didn't you hear what I said? You should be praying. You need to be paying attention. This is not the time to be snoozing, buddy. You don't know in a couple of hours the pressure that's going to be on you. But you know what? When you think you're strong, why do you need to pray? When you don't think you're weak, then you don't put up your guard, do you? Your enemy knows that. Step three in Peter's downfall was he reacted emotionally in his flesh to pressure. And we saw that today when push came to shove and they moved in to arrest Jesus. Peter did what a lot of people do. He just grabbed the closest weapon and started hacking at the closest person. Totally wasted energy, totally in the flesh. And Jesus had to heal somebody to cover Peter's tracks. Step four in Peter's downfall was that he followed at a distance, which verse 58 tells us in this narrative. He followed. He ran away, but he came back, but he didn't come all the way back. He was afraid. Pure and simple. So he just followed at a distance. You want to know how to break a pastor's heart? I see this happen all the time. I see people who say they're followers of Jesus, but they just move farther and farther and farther back, farther out into the world, and I know it's only a matter of time. The predator is going to get them. And that set up Peter for step number five, which is where he fell. He found himself warming himself at the enemy's fire. Shouldn't have been there to begin with. He should have been with the rest of the disciples. Should have been with Jesus, actually. Following at a distance, it's easy to try to blend in. And the problem is that you get lonely. And when you get lonely, you look for comfort. And I promise you, if you are distant from Jesus, the devil will provide you comfort. But you are in great danger.